What's up, everybody? It's Friday once again. Happy Friday. My name's Indy, and that gentleman next to me is Jay Powell from Powell Group Consulting, who is the sponsor of this show here. And welcome to Indie Game Business. We'd like to welcome Raming. I did good, didn't right? I? And I just scared Ash. Boo! Boo, Ash. She was all focused. I know it, and we scared her. And we're talking about a lot of things. The title's PR for developers, but we are going to be covering a lot of interesting things, and this should be really good. And also, remember, both of you, to unmute in Discord. Oh,
fuck. Really?
Everyone in the muted is been muted in Discord, but me.
I never remember.
Woo! I'm the champion okay, this okay. time.
Here we go. And all Jay's right. scary clown. Scary My clown.
Right. The scary clown of Discord. I still couldn't figure out how to get that. You're going to have to send me screenshots.
Talk to Dennis.
You want it. As well. You want it.
I want to be the clown.
I want it. No.
So,
no clown.
Once we're all clowns. it's a good day. Had one of those crazy ass weeks here on the consulting side, but everything's wonderful now.
It's Friday. TGIF.
And it's Friday. Yes, I was going to actually go see the Godzilla Kong movie with my son, but apparently his 12-year-old social calendar is full this afternoon, and so we're going to go. I know.
He ixnayed you?
It's amazing. But back to real stuff. So let's start with where we always love starting, and I know you've been doing this a long time like I have, but let's go into how you originally got into the industry and then walk us through your career up to this point.
Wow. Gosh, can I even remember that far back? Yeah, so I, oddly enough, I actually knew that I wanted to do PR. So I actually went to USC Annenberg because they were one of the few schools that actually had a PR program. And that actually focused kind of on media, right? That wasn't theoretical PR. Or interpersonal communications. And so luckily I got to be in LA. So of course there's a lot of entertainment here. And if anyone knows how to do math, almost three decades, that would put me into the 90s, right? And so still pretty, I'm not gonna say early on in the industry, but it was almost 30 years ago. So not that many companies around and stuff, but there was a PR agency called Bender, Goldman & Helper, and it's not called that anymore. It became Bender, Helper, Impact, and now, I should know this, they got bought up by someone else, a much larger agency, but they are still doing games PR. So anyways, I actually managed to get a job there in the corporate division. I actually wanted to do TV. So I didn't get a job in the TV division, but I actually ended up in their corporate division, and they actually had a client that was called the IDSA. So if you've been in the industry long enough, you know that the IDSA is now the ESA, which is the governing body for the industry, right? Put E3 on for the industry. We did all sort of like the media and like not the logistical, you know, putting the booths up and stuff, but I think I did all the media, actually getting all the media in to the show and actually approving all the media who tried to get into the show. So that was fun.
Well, you were the one that was gatekeeping it back in the day.
I was.
Okay.
I was.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually,
you think it's hard to get approved as a media? Try getting approved as an agent. Yeah, it was.
I don't know about that. I didn't have to do that. But it was, I mean, listen, I had people faxing mastheads in, right? Mastheads and their bylines. It was back in the faxing days. So it was really, but listen, it was really fun. It was unfortunately a ridiculous amount of hours because we were a very small team. But also it was really rewarding. And honestly, I know I'm digressing for 1 second, but I'm
this entire show is going to figure out. Don't worry about it. You're good.
Okay, great. But I'm trying to find this one journalist who I helped, and I think he was from Poland. And I tried so hard to get him over here, and I helped him tirelessly with, like, I don't know if it was like a visa. Like, I think we had to get him sponsored and all this crazy stuff. And so the day he arrived, he brought me 2 dozen red roses and a bottle of Chopin vodka. Yes. And I don't drink, but so it was so crazy because he walked into like the press, like the badge room, which was a giant room with like 2 dozen roses and this bottle of vodka. And I can't remember his name, and this is awful, but honestly, it was almost 30 years ago. So if you're out there, tell me who you are. I'm so sorry. I don't remember. Anyways.
I had to write many of those visas as well. I mean, the visa sponsorship letters. I did get liquor as a thank you. I never got roses, though. I got a lot of vodka.
Pretty. Mm-hmm. You're not as pretty as me. maybe just not as nice.
Well, I think either one of those will be applicable here, but that's beside the point. Yes.
But from Bender, I got recruited into Activision, and those were definitely still the PC days. It was just before the console revolution, right? And so I was lucky enough to work on some really cool PC games, and then the whole console stuff hit, and I started working on like the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and all the action sports games. And I was there for 12 years. So I did lots of multi-billion dollar franchises. So I did that for about 6.5 years. We tried to do the whole action sports separate kind of brand thing like EA did, EA Big. I did like the Marvel movie games, then ended my career there with the whole Guitar Hero, DJ Hero stuff. And that franchise almost broke me. And I am a workhorse, but that like did this, like not just a this trajectory, but it was like a this. And then, you know, everyone and their mothers got involved with that one. So it was a pretty...
I don't think a lot of people realize how many different Guitar Hero SKUs actually shipped. It was like 30 or 40.
Well, I mean, no, it's more than that. So it's because in 1 year, so we started in 2007, and I can tell you, I started before I started. I was in Vegas for something. Maybe a gifting suite or something, but that's like the first time I met Slash. Everyone was like, stay in Vegas, you're gonna meet Slash. And honestly, that's when I became friends with Slash, and we're still friends to this day, which is awesome. But
what? Oh, jealous. Wait, love me some Slash.
Why? He's a nice human. I'm a nice human. I mean, we're not like besties, but it's like you say hi and how you're doing and try to, I mean, he's literally one of the hardest working humans in rock and roll. He works a lot between his two bands, right? So anyways, digression. Yes, we put out, so by 2009, so not 9 SKUs, but we had 9 different Guitar Hero, DJ Hero games, right? And so each of those games had how many SKUs? I don't know. How many consoles, handhelds were there back
then?
Probably
5 or 6.
Right. So that's how many SKUs I had in 1 year. So that year was a little crazy for me. because it was also global, right? Activision had how many offices back then? So yeah, it was a little crazy. I did not sleep. So that's when I did sleep about 1 to 2 hours a night, I think.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the BlackBerry was my companion, sadly. And that BBM sound was just, and that's why I couldn't sleep, right? So, I mean, we would stay at the office probably till like 1 or 2 in the morning. And then I would go home, and then the BBMs would start at probably about 3 or 4. And then, I don't know. So I don't, honestly, I don't sleep very well still. And it was, you know, when I left Activision. So that was, you know, we'll talk about layoffs at some point. That was my first layoff, but I asked for a package. I was like, I know, you know, the numbers aren't great this year. So I would love to consider a package if there's one for me.
I have done that as well. So, yes.
But that was my first layoff and to ask for one, that was interesting, right? But that's another thing, and that's another topic, right? It's the fact that you can sometimes negotiate packages, right? But another topic. So from Activision, where'd I go? Oh, I went to Machinima. So in 2010, right, the thing was content is king, right? That's like starting the surge of content, right? Content creators. And so I found Machinima to be really interesting. And that's where I actually, it was so interesting to look back on, because that's where a lot of the big YouTube, Twitch kids came from. And that's where I met, God, like the Optic team members and, oh my God, Fwiz, who's now like, I don't know, is he retired? He became like head of YouTube gaming. And then now he's like an angel investor and all this. I mean, it's crazy. So 2010, I think he was like a content creator on Machinima. He was an Optic team member. Anyways, so I was at Machinima not for very long because I ran into the co-founder of Gamefly, and I remember this, at a Christmas party. And he lectured me for a while and he said, "Why aren't you working for me?" And I was like, "You do discs in the mail. What do you need me to do for you PR-wise?" Right? And he was like, "No." He's like, "We're going to go public, doing this. I'm going into mobile. I'm like all this stuff." Right? And so I was like, "Okay, well, I definitely would love to help take a company public, you know, because, well, you don't see the TV on right now, but ever since we were young, the stock market shows have always been on our television, like since like morning till, well, not we went to school, but like at 6:30 in the morning when the market opens, it was always on. My mom has always been like a stock market person. Anyways, so I live and breathe that stuff. So I was like, yes, I would love to help take a company public. So I went over to Gamefly. And then, of course, as soon as I got there, they're like, "Oh, we're in a quiet period." And I was like, "Oh, okay, this is not what I expected." And that's something that I didn't know, right? It was like, "Oh, we have to do this. This is interesting." And then 2 years went by and they had layoffs. So that was my next layoff. So then that's the first time that I actually had to do consulting, which was very interesting for me because as a behind the scenes kind of person, I'm not a, I don't know, a lot of people are like a hustler or whatever. Like, I'm not a big hustler for myself per se, right? So I don't go out there and like, "Hey, you should hire me to do this kind of stuff," right? It's like, I'm great when I'm PRing for other people, products, all this other stuff. But for myself, it's not the same thing, right? So I like it when my work speaks for itself and people come to me, right? And the world doesn't work like that, really. So it's, I mean, it does and it doesn't, right? So again, it's still jobs. Generally, I still get from people knowing who I am and the quality of my work, right? So then I went to Jam City and it was the same situation where I got introduced in and I was like, "Yeah, mobile, right? I'd love to work on mobile." And also it was the same situation where they wanted to go public and Crystal Wolf was already a success from, get this, MySpace. Blast from the past. Yes, he's not Tom. He was the other. He was actually the CEO of MySpace. So he was already successful. And he wanted GM City. Well, it's not. It was called SGM back then. Now it's called GM City. But so it was the same situation where I did want to help them go public. But again, it was the same thing where it's like numbers, numbers, numbers have to get there. So that didn't happen. And then where did I go? Oh, so then I ended up, I got brought in by an ex-Activision person to do some consulting for a fintech company. So I did fintech for a while, which is good, learning fintech. And did that for a long while because then it ended up being full-time. And oh, they had layoffs. And then did I do more? Oh, and then I did more consulting. Sorry, I'm like, oh, this is very long. I'm getting bored hearing myself speaking, Jay. So then I did some consulting with Servios. So that was fun. So VR. But that was also, so TQ as the, I think the chief product officer there. So anyways, I knew him from Activision and Marvel. He's awesome, but VR company. So that's really interesting. They're doing an Aliens game and did that for a while until I went to Probably Monsters. So that was up until October, until they had layoffs. So here I am.
But and this is honestly, this is what exactly the reason that I started the Powell Group 14 years ago is because I was I'm on the East Coast and I was interviewing with jobs on the West Coast with a lot of these the same big companies that are in the industry. And in the back of my head, I just kept thinking, what happens if I move my family all the way to the West Coast and then somebody has a bad stock day and we have layoffs, then I'm stuck there. So I started consulting, but
are you saying you don't like the West Coast, Jay? Is that what you're saying?
I do not like there. No, maybe I have to have trees and mountains and shit. I can't do these big cities. But that was a lot of it. So, I mean, just mentally, obviously we've had a ridiculous number of layoffs in the last year. How do you handle that? How do you deal with the fact that all of a sudden you're out of no fault of your own?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is my third one, right? I mean, technically my first one, I volunteered for it, right? So, listen, it's financially, right? I've set myself up so I'm not totally freaking out, right? So it's this time, right? And so there have been times where I've been totally freaked out, but then that's also why you use your network and you do some consulting and you try to figure out your life. But you're also after three decades in the industry, though, is very much a time of reflection and potentially pivoting at this point, right? So it's also looking at the industry, a person at my level, most of my friends are in the positions where I would fit in somewhere, right? Are there any jobs for me? I don't know, right? So I am looking and I'm trying to talk to my network. And so we'll see, right? But is it time to pivot out? I don't know. I am right now consulting, you know, with the Tetris company, but they have a big 40th anniversary coming up, right? So it's a special project, but, you know, could be short term, could be long term for the year, whatever. I don't know, right? It just depends on how long they need me for and what we're doing. And I love Tetris, right? That's actually one of the games I played for.
I remember playing it. on the original Game Boy in high school lunch, you know. So yes, that
obsessively, mm-hmm. right? Like I played honestly, and that's why it's weird because I always get earworms stuck in my head, and unfortunately, that theme song is one of them. So, and to this day, right? So it's weird working with them now because it's really one of the earworms that I always get stuck in my head.
Is that their whole music at corporate? Is that a
I don't know. I don't even know if they have a landline. I doubt they have a landline.
I don't know who has
it. I doubt. So, right? I haven't asked. That's weird. Yeah.
We've already got a question, and this is something that I'm very curious about as well. And I will confess, years ago, I thought fintech was basically the technology coming out of Finland. It was years before I realized what fintech actually was. How does that fintech experience dovetail into what you do with gaming?
Oh, sorry. Well, okay. To be clear, the fintech was fintech SaaS for gaming. I mean, it was kind of it's a go-between. It is the middleman to take payments in gaming. So it was a very interesting experience.
to say the least. So
yeah,
you've obviously done a whole lot of stuff from the AAA side. The mm-hmm. reason we wanted to have you here is because as the industry reboots, so to speak, you know, we're already seeing a lot of these folks have been laid off from AAA starting studios. And, you know, I'm very vocal that in the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to see an honest to God explosion of, you know, indie games. And not all these indie games are going to find publishers. So they're going to be self-publishing to get it out the door. What are some of the key aspects from, you know, your career that in AAA anyway, that apply to indie studios who may be having to come up with their own strategy right now?
Well, all of it does, right? I mean, the whole thing is if you can, listen, I mean, that's why I went to Probably Monsters, right? So the whole point of Probably Monsters was they were going to try and they were supposed to self-publish, right? And so that's why they had a large funding event. And so they were building up a self-publishing team. But if you're an indie, I mean, the whole thing is like, you have to stage your building of the team, right? So of course, you've got to build the game, right? And the thing is, you have to make sure you're building a good game. So you have to have checks and balances on that first, right? And I think that for me, even with AAA, it's, you have to make sure you're building a good game. And you have to make sure you're building a game that people actually want to play. So, no, I'm not kidding.
I know you're not. And this is why I'm laughing, because we live in a world where you actually have to say that. But it's a reality.
Yeah. Yes. Because unfortunately, like, I get it. It's your baby. Like, you love it. But you have to make sure other people are going to love it. Right. And it's, because even working on AAA stuff, right, it was, and there were times where I had to kind of say it because I was the conduit, right, with between journalists and production teams, right? It was like, hey, they're not too thrilled with the game that they're seeing, right? And then production teams would be like, what are you talking about? It's amazing. This and that and this and that. I was like, okay, well, that's not the feedback that you're getting from people outside of your bubble, right? So, I mean, honestly, that's what I'm just saying. So start with a good game. Start with a game that you know other people outside of your bubble want to play, right? So whether that be testing, even just the concept, right? So from concept stage, just see if other people are interested, right? And then when you start making stuff, even like testing like your characters, like are people interested in seeing that character? Are people interested in seeing the world? Are people interested in seeing, you know, anything and everything that you're building, right? It's, and I'm not saying test the heck out of it, but just are people interested, right? And then when you move on, build out your team slowly, right? It's like for indies, it's like, I know the dollar has to go a long way, right? You have to, and honestly, yeah, people have to multitask, right? So like, again, at Probably Monsters, you know, I didn't have budget to build out a team like I had, obviously, at Activision, right? But my priority was getting a community manager, right, for a game that was furthest along. And again, it's like getting trusted people in to look at the game and be like, what do you think, right? And really having that close-knit community testing out the game and be like, is this a game that you would want to play for hours and hours and hours and hours of your life? And then you can continue on, right? Or is there stuff that you need to change? But also know that it's still just a subset of your audience, right? Because honestly, to survive these days, you also have to go to a wider audience.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, right?
So what are some of the more effective ways that you can get outside of your bubble? Because that is a huge problem that a lot of teams have. They're like, oh my God, everybody loves what we're doing. And I'm like, who's everybody? Your cousins and your parents and your friends? Or is that, so I mean, how can they reach outside of their initial bubble and get some of this feedback from folks that, you know, are relatively new to the game or the company or whatever?
Yeah, well, so that's part of the problem, right? Is honestly who to trust, because you don't want stuff leaking either, right? So the whole thing is IP. And so there's a fine balance. And honestly, I don't know if we've found that balance, to be honest, because because it's true. It's like, who do you trust, right? So you can go with, there are testing companies. Unfortunately, you do have to pay, but sometimes it is worth it. But there are vetted testing companies that then do have testers on their rosters who have been vetted, right? Who are trusted, who then go, okay, I have a certain amount of testers who are interested in this type of game, who then will not go outside of their bubble and go, oh yeah, I played this really cool or really, really crappy game. You know, like at some point you have to trust, right? And go, okay, I've got to let my baby go, got to test it, and then hope that nobody leaks stuff. And the whole thing is, most gamers, if you leak once, then you're off the list, right? And then you're out. So hopefully that doesn't happen that often. And, you know, there are a lot of gamers out there that, you know, you can bring into the circle. So that is one way of doing it. And honestly, you can, you could try to do it by having your Discord and building your own community of people that you trust. But again, it kind of turns into just like your same sounding board. So I do suggest going outside of it by going to a testing company or doing like an open call. But then again, you risk leaks, right? So it just depends on what stage you're at of your development and how ready you are to show your baby to the world.
Shameless plug, the Powell Group does those risk assessments and gameplay analysis for you for a small fee. It does cost money, but it's not expensive, and you get a nice big report telling you exactly how your game is going to be received. See, I love that. We just shameless plug right into this.
Well, there is that. But well, there is that, though, also, right? So we do use consultants, right, and consultant agencies, right, to measure. But we usually... How often do we recommend that? So we do, right? So we do, from even concept to like reviews, right? Use groups like yours to like go, hey, will gamers be open to this concept? How is the gameplay, right? And we do use different groups to, you know, because people have different tastes as well, right? But, you know, that's one group as well. Right. And it's like, oh, there's some who are ex-journalists, there's some who are, you know, ex-production, there's some who are, right. So that's definitely one group of folks, right, who can give you feedback. So yeah, there's many different ways to get that feedback. But again, it also depends on what stage of production you're in.
Yeah. And it is important to get it early, because if you're going down the wrong path, you want to know that early on versus at beta, when you're getting ready to launch in 3 months and then everyone's like, this game is not relevant anymore.
Yes.
Because, yeah.
I would definitely, yeah, but that's also goes for, you know, when people want to do early access, right, at beta. And it's like, well, that's great, right? You want to do early access at beta. What are you actually willing to change when you get a whole bunch of feedback from the gamers, right? What are you willing to promise people? Because then if you're not willing to actually, or you don't have the budget, or you don't have the time to make the changes, then what is your purpose of doing this, right? And then if you do it at alpha, like it's the same thing, or pre-alpha, what changes, what budget do you have to make changes? Are you willing to do, right? So it's like, it's just a matter of your relationship and with your community, but also what are you promising? What budgets do you have? What timeline do you have? Because then also, you know, I've also heard teams like wanting to just stay in early access for forever. And then you're just like, well, what's the point of that? If you have a game that's never going to launch, that's also, for me, that's a PR nightmare, and I don't understand that.
But I mean, devil's advocate, though, how long, Baldur's Gate 3 was in early access for a couple of years, maybe?
I know.
And that one turned out okay.
I know. But how many games are out there? Right? How many games are made ever, yes. Right? So, again, an exception to the rule. I mean, I guess everybody, sure, if you want to try that, everyone can try that, right? I mean,
but we're not going to guarantee you're going to drop, you know, 10, 20 million units, you know, it's
exactly.
It is a fine line. And you, in some cases, well, in a lot of cases, if you, the minute you start selling your game, early access or not, you have pretty much shot yourself in the foot for a publisher, because there are very few that want to come out once you've already launched. So you need to be ready to be committed on the early access self-publishing route if you're going to launch it.
Yeah. So what's your plan? I mean, you need to have a plan, obviously, when you start, right? And you just go, well, I guess my question is, what is it that you want, right? What do you want from the start? Do you want a partner in all this, or do you want to go it on your own and do everything that you want to do from start to finish, right? Because once you sign with the publisher, you do have to make some changes that you may not want to make, right? Well,
that is a good segue into one of our next questions from Mark on LinkedIn. What if you have next to no budget and you're working on a shoestrings? Are there any strategies to get started?
What if you have next to no budget and working on a shoestring? But at what stage? Mark, like, I mean, that's what I'm not understanding. So what does this mean? Like,
so I mean, let's just say hypothetically they're at alpha.
Yeah.
You know, it's early enough that they can still make changes, and they need to start building that community and getting the awareness out there, but they're not like absolutely getting ready to launch. How do you effectively or most effectively get rolling when you have next to no marketing budget?
Yeah. Well, I guess my question is, well, are you looking to self-publish? Are you looking to self-publish, or are you looking to find a partner? Right. So I guess that also, so if you're looking to self-publish and you have no money, right. So I would hope that you've started building your community, right. So that I'll, oh God. No. Oh my God, Mark, you're killing me.
So we are starting very fresh.
So you're doing no work is what you're telling me. So you want to go the route where you've done no work for yourself, right? I mean, I guess that's my question is, you can't, when you start making a game, right? You pay for everything on stream.
So he says that for those of you on the podcast audio, so he says he's paid for everything on Steam and courting consoles. But I mean, this is actually a very familiar scenario. So I know in best case, you need to have marketing money set aside from the beginning. Unfortunately, that's not the reality with a lot of indie teams. So I mean, to step one, get that community going. So social media, Discord, where?
Yeah, I mean, that's my whole issue with this question is that I would never not go in with a plan or any kind of budget, right? Because the whole thing is, if you're making a game, you have to figure out how to promote it, right? By the time you're at this stage, right? Going into, not even if you're past pre-alpha, you have to have some kind of the fact that you have to have some kind of community, right? You have to have built your either community, well, both actually, community, social media, even if you're courting publishers and or yeah, your consoles, you have to show them that you have some kind of momentum or interest in your product or in your world, right?
This is what we go back to. Yeah. Well, it is to an extent, because I mean, when we do the scouting for publishers and investors, one of the first questions that they have is like, how many wish lists, how many followers, how big is their Discord?
That's true. Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, the wish list, very true. Yeah, because it's weird. I'm like, I can't wrap my head around this question because I've never been in this situation, I guess, where I've just never, that people haven't done the work first, right? Or not had the plan. Because then you also, because even from the very start, we've laid out even just like the whole content plan of like how to divvy stuff up and how to, because even like virally, right? Even if you don't have a budget, you have to have the strategy of like how to build viral, like grassroots momentum to build excitement for your game, for your world, for anything of your IP, right? I'm assuming it's your IP, right? And something that's brand spanking new that you need to build excitement for in order for the consoles to be excited, right? So if you've done everything on Steam already, then you should actually have a community. Or else, what have you done on Steam?
So where are there online resources? And this is, I mean, what you're diving into is perfect. You know, are there, for teams that don't know how to go and build that initial content plan, and, you know, the month to month, this is what we're going to do. Are there places, are there online resources that you know of where they can go and get like a step-by-step? Or is it just, a lot of this is just, you know, shoot from the hip anyway. But you have to have a plan when you're shooting from the hip.
I don't know if there's any online resources, because honestly, I've been doing this for so long that it's all on my hard drive.
So, Mark, if you look into our YouTube page, there's also entire tracks on there that goes through some of this stuff. But the end result is you do need to be planning from day one. And if you haven't, you know, that's okay, but you need to like start backpedaling and planning from day to day. I mean, and get it from that side. But yeah, we do have a lot of that stuff.
Great. Great, Jay. Yeah, no, but basically, so Mark, you just work back. So, I mean, this is also, again, where it's hard to say, because we usually try to pin down a launch date, right? And then we work backwards from that, right? So there's no floating of, hey, we may launch here and randomly. So that's why it's also very hard for PR and marketing folks to have huge delays, right? Because when your game is only so big, there's only so many assets we can use to promote the game, right? Without giving away the entire game. That's why it's also a problem for us with early access, right? It's like, there's only so much, that you can divvy up, right? Without giving away the whole game. Because then why? And that was part of my issue with one of these early access things, right? It's like looking at a schedule. So basically, Mark, you build out a schedule. That's what it comes down to. You build out a calendar. You, from start to finish, right? You have your production calendar. And then what you do is, on top of that, you overlay a PR marketing calendar. Right. So by the time you're like in pre-alpha, that is when you can start sort of your content calendar. Right. So that is when you can maybe start pulling content, but you definitely need to be building your community. I don't even know before then. I'd have to look at a calendar, but it's sort of again, when you're ready to drop that first asset, but it's also when you're ready to announce that you exist, right? It's like, when do you want to announce that you as a studio exist? when you want to announce your game and what genre it is. Because the other thing, right, it's like, if you're a new IP, if you're a new genre, right, like you think you've got some crazy genre melding gameplay, right, and nobody's done it before, and you want to be the first, do you announce it now, right? It's like, you know, one of our games, we were all excited because it was genre melding, right? And we're like, oh, it's cool. We're gonna meld genres and no one's done this before. And literally someone else went out with it first. And it, what are you gonna do? Like, and they're, and you're like, oh, and they kind of maybe said it better. And you're like, that's not how we were gonna word it, but dang it, they did it, you know? And so there is the risk of all of that. But then you have to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, what are we doing differently? Again, it's always about how to, you always have to, oh my God, what's the word? Not diversify. What's the word, Jay? You have to, what makes you different, right? It's yeah. Literally, why do the gamers care, right? So what makes you new, unique, and different? And that's what people care about. Or what makes you better than the last?
And, that, right? And that's if the way we phrase it a lot. Because it's, you know, we always used to use unique selling points. But the reality is, and from your example just there, where you thought you had something completely unique and then somebody else bumped you by a couple of months, it is ridiculously hard to have a true unique selling point. So it yes. is more along the lines of, why is this game different than other games in the genre? Because that's about as close as you can get these days to having something that's a truly unique selling point.
Yeah. I mean, that goes for any product, right? Like any product in the world at this point, right? We have 8 billion humans on this planet. We have so many products. Consumerism is probably at its all-time highest. Like any product on this planet is like, how much is actually unique, right? And it's just all a matter of how you sell it, to be honest.
The unique ones is that shit you see on TV at like 3 a.m. and, you know, on those commercials. All right. So on the feedback loop, good question here from the Discord. How do you feel about showing at conventions like a PAX East, PAX West thing to get that kind of feedback? We've done some of that and it feels pretty good, but it kind of still feels like the convention crowd is a bit of a feedback bubble.
Listen, I love, so for PR and marketing people, conventions are a nightmare, right? Because deadlines, it's, but same with production, right? It's like you guys have to deliver a build that doesn't crash, right? So, hey, how fun is that? But for us, especially PR people who have to put the booths together and make sure everything looks nice and, you know, I love that stuff. Like I love doing events, right? But it's always crazy deadlines and it's always like a crazy high. I enjoy them. And honestly, there's highs and lows because then there's also people who are like, have zero interest in your game and just walk on by. Right. It's like, oh, you don't want to see my baby. Right. My baby's not pretty enough for you to stop and see. Right. So there's that. Right. So it's not all positive. So, but the people who do stop and take a look, right? It's, I mean, if you get all positive feedback, good for you, right?
But your point right there is perfect, though. You're only getting positive feedback from the people who wanted to stop. So you're getting survivor bias in there.
Yeah. And so I think that's not a bad thing. Like if you end up with like a big old crowd around your kiosk, take it, right? Because then you've got something very interesting, right? Because there's a lot to see at these conventions and conferences, right? So I would take that as a good thing. And yeah, it's a feedback bubble, but then you should also be checking online afterwards and going, what do they really say, right? Because they did stop and take a look, right? And obviously like beautiful trailers, they were all very well produced. Of course, they show the best. Sometimes it's not all gameplay. It's a lot of CGI, right? You know, and people can talk about that stuff as like the most amazing thing ever. I would take it for now, right? Because a lot of times people aren't always positive, right? And so I don't necessarily think it's a feedback bubble. it's a good sign if you get mostly positive, because that's not always the case, even from conventions.
And when you're showing it, you also need to realize that it's not just gamers walking around that crowd. Publishers and investors and scouts are walking around that crowd too. And so, yes, your feedback may be bubble-ish, but that exposure that you're getting, if you're getting that exposure, is good, because, you know, as someone who does scouting and, you know, with my little team, we absolutely look and go, okay, what's going on over there? What's that game? Is that something that is open? So yeah, it is a, I think it's worth it.
Yeah. But, I do think it's worth it to finish that answer. Right. I definitely think it's worth showing your games at conventions if your game is ready, right? If your game is ready and you can get the general consumer to have hands-on without having to put it out everywhere because it's not ready for that, and, you know, it's a more controlled situation, I would definitely do it.
And so, all right, the next logical follow-on here is you have that crowd, or you have some crowd, or you're showing. Do you use QR codes at the stand, and what game information do you usually put in the link to capture the user's information and direct them to the right place? So in a sense, you have this crowd at a conference. How do you convert them?
Oh, always, always have QR codes. Always have QR codes to capture if you can. But it's generally, listen, I don't know what all the rules are right now about capturing information. I'm not up on what's legal, what's not legal right now. I think.
Well, you're not going to go get their address anyway. You know, it's
no, but everything, but everything's opt in, right? Everything now is opt in, right? And so whatever you can get, right? But surveys are always good, and if it's just for your particular game, but I mean. Usually you'd be like in a, you know, unless you really have money to get your own booth, usually you'd be in like in a publisher booth, or you'd be in a booth of just a bunch of indie games and stuff like that. So yeah, if you have a QR code, I'd capture as much information as possible, but because it's always opt-in, I wouldn't make a bunch of stuff mandatory, but if you can get feedback on your game that way, that's amazing. But definitely have their email.
Yeah.
Or Discord, well, whatever.
Email, pull them to a Discord. And then I see a lot of folks have their wish list up, and a wish list is fine, but you're not capturing anything that way. You're just getting a wish list.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
and then you definitely want to be able to reach out to them again if you can.
So what if they did, and I've seen this, you do a QR code, but that actually goes to a Google form that has a link to your Discord and your wish list. But then you capture a little bit of what did you think of our game at the show along the way. And as long as you aren't selling that information and they opt into that, which you can put at the bottom of the form, you should be fine.
I would always put that at the top of the form. Don't put it at the bottom. Just, put everything. Like if you're not selling, sharing that information, always put that at the top.
Well, that's good to know. Ours is always at the bottom. Okay.
No, put it at the bottom. They don't get it. I mean, because like for me, that kind of sales stuff, like it, I will never get to the bottom.
Huh.
Always put that stuff at the top. And a lot of this stuff, just make sure, because those Google forms, there's a lot of, just make sure the barrier to entry, right? The stuff that you really need, put that asterisk, right? If there's stuff that's like, can be optional, just make it optional. Because that a lot of times makes people just like, I'm not answering that question, and then you lose people.
Yeah, and I definitely wouldn't have more than like one page, because there's nothing worse than getting to the bottom
of
the page on a survey and it's like click for more, and I'm like, oh shit, how long
am I going to do this? God no. And don't do more than like 10. Jesus, like no, not more than like 10 questions.
We
like,
don't need that much information.
No.
From Weston World Studio on YouTube, what are the effective ways to promote games in different worldwide regions and languages? Are there tools to translate social posts, or should you have separate social handles for different regions? That's a good one.
So, I try to have, I mean, it depends, right? If your game name translates, you should just have one handle, right? If you need to have region specific, because someone else is already, I wouldn't do region specific if you don't need, because it just makes things more complicated. What was the whole question?
Oh, but I mean, are there any tools that you can use for translations? Or I mean, if you don't have to have a separate social handle, and that's fine. I mean, I see very little of that. And when people do it, it's weird. It's like game underscore DE for Germany. And no, but half the people
don't know what shit means. Yeah. So yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have different regions if you don't have to. But for translation, unfortunately, again, working with bigger companies, we just use translation companies. So I don't know of a tool that actually does that properly for you, because there are definitely things I would just be weary about certain slang when you use translation tools. I don't know what to suggest on this, sorry, because if you use a translation tool, I would definitely try to, and you can, if you don't have like a big budget, right, to actually pay a translation company, maybe what you can do is use a translation tool and then double check it with a translation company that's based in that region or whatever it is, or someone who's native to that language, and go, hey, what do you think of this? Because honestly, there's a lot of times where slang, or sometimes it seems too businesslike or too corporate, and it just won't fly. So I would just be very weary of direct translations, because even like I've seen that stuff with, and I'm not even completely like fluent with my Chinese anymore, but I see a lot of even like Netflix translation, and they have a ton of money, and their translations are off. So
to be fair, some of their English subtitles are usually off too. So
but that's what I'm saying. It's like the subtitles, the translation, like, you know, it's all off, and they have a ton of money.
But so, the reality though is for 95% of indie teams, you don't need to worry about it. You know, their English is going to get you by for what you need right now. And then, you know, if you get a publisher on board, then it's a little easier. Sure. And if you do targeting, it's like what we typically see is maybe ad targeting on Facebook, and you can work your way through that language barrier. But 9 times out of 10, especially for indie teams, you're fine with English. And because a lot of the gamers around the world, that's what they play in anyway. So don't, your budget is finite. Focus on native language first. Because yeah, translation tools get expensive. Translation companies get expensive, and you really want to save that money for actually translating your game versus your social media posts.
Oh yeah. I mean, don't worry about translating social media.
All right. So this is a new one for me. I don't even know about this. Anton on YouTube says, speaking of audiences and types of games, Discord announced an activities SDK for building games natively in the app. You can, so now you'll be able to build native games within your Discord server. Thoughts?
I have zero thoughts on that. Sorry, I'm not up to date on that.
I don't know how that we. My gut says, why would you spend time making a game in Discord versus making your actual game? If you want to make a job, a business out of making Discord games, sure, that's absolutely a thing. Yeah. But I wouldn't focus on it for marketing your existing game. You're basically just sucking hours and time.
Resources.
Yeah.
Resources.
And also, it's brand new, so let somebody else screw it up first.
Or if you could do it well and be the first, you could kill it.
Well, there are. I mean, Dan mentioned a guy the other day. There are companies who make games specifically for Discord, and they're hugely successful with millions of people following. Right. I don't know how you monetize those. And, right, you know, it could be something to keep your team engaged, but I wouldn't focus on it for the sake of, you know, promoting your existing game. Just work on your game and then worry about the rest of it later.
Right.
All right, so we've got like 5 more minutes left. If you've got other PR questions, pop them in chat, either on Discord or on whatever you're watching on, because it all filters into, you know, our StreamYard anyway. Other thoughts that you've got coming? So here's, let's talk about a little bit about, you know, what you're doing now and getting out of the industry. You're doing something that is, I haven't seen until very recently, a fractional executive. Mm-hmm. Explain what that is.
That is, well, when you have startups, A, there's not enough funding to have me on full time, right? And then there's just also not enough need yet, right? Where you're running like full speed as a company. So yeah. So I actually have 2 startups, and one of them is actually not even, both of them are going to raise. Both of the startups that I'm working with are going to raise. And so, yeah, that's what it is.
So, I mean, after you know, a long time in this industry and multiple layoffs in this industry, do you want to keep doing games, or is you know, has it finally, is it enough enough?
Well, no, I mean, because I listen, I love the people, some people, I love some people in games. Listen, I just did a talk with Wiggy this week too. I don't do that many talks, and you guys both hit me up for the same. It's awesome. I love doing it. But I did a talk about networking on Wednesday, and they're like, you know everyone. And I was like, no, I know about half of everyone, right? But it's a matter of I do love a lot of people in this industry, and that's honestly why I stayed in for so long. And I do love games, right? I mean, I don't really play console games anymore. And sadly, I'm honestly just playing a lot of Pokemon still right now, because my partner lives downtown and he makes me walk everywhere. And so I do play Pokemon a lot.
There's nothing wrong with that. We do that as well. Nothing to be ashamed of until you start downloading the side apps that let you join raids from anywhere. But I mean, that's not the point.
Oh, what? Okay, I need to learn about that. Or maybe I don't, because honestly, my partner does not play any games at all. And he looks at me with a side eye when I'm not listening to him while he's trying to talk to me and I'm Pokemoning. So, also not good for relationships, right?
But depends on the relationship. It's like our whole family does Pokemon Go. So we're all...
No. He likes having conversations.
What a strange individual.
I mean, weird, right? He likes talking to me and me talking back, and actually me listening to him while he's talking. So, yeah, it's a thing. So what were we talking about?
I've got another one, a really wonderful one. So as someone who wants to get into indie marketing, is there a good way to break into the industry and build experience? And this is marketing. Game marketing in general, not necessarily.
Well, it depends. Are you already, so are you in the industry? Are you in marketing? Are you in school? What level are you at right now? So I guess that's my question.
Beginner.
Where are you starting from?
Just getting rolling.
Well, because the question is, can you do an internship, or are you at a coordinator level? So, I mean, it's not are you in marketing?
Oh, about to graduate. I guess about to graduate. They're about to graduate college.
Yeah. So A, I would do a summer internship if you can. If you haven't done that, then just try to get a coordinator job. To be honest, it's not, you just have to be able to live on not that much money. Because there's,
that's, I mean, like the rest of the industry too.
I'm just saying, listen, my
but,
first
right, but job go, do a little more. All right, so talk about what that coordinator job actually is. Are you talking like social media coordinator or like
community, it just depends, but no, there's marketing, but it depends on their interest, right? There's a lot to do in marketing. So is that, do you want to do straight marketing? Do you want to be like the person who ends up marketing the game, like doing digital marketing, like the one that does the ad buys. Do you want to do social media marketing? Do you want to do the digital marketing? Do you want to do, you know, it depends on where you want to end up, right? It's like, again, do you want to do community management? Do you want to do, because it all, there's so many facets of it, right? So, but again, for indie games, right, there's probably just a marketing department. So I would just hit up a lot of developers and see if they need a marketing coordinator. To be honest, that's the best way to do it. Just go on LinkedIn and start hitting people up, or go onto people's websites. If there's a game that you're interested in and you want to work on that team, just hit people up, to be honest.
It's a good way to
people are nice in this industry. Most people, again,
most people. But it's also a really good way to get a variety of experience, because the reality is most indie teams pre-publisher, if they have a publisher, the publisher's allegedly taking care of this. But otherwise, they don't need a full-time person anyway. So you could come in, you know, at a lower rate, or at least, you know, lower amount of hours a week, and actually do this for multiple games. I've seen a lot of folks do that. I mean, and that's our
it depends on where they're at. No, it depends on where in production they're at, right? So if they're 6 months to a year from launching the game, they may need you full time, to be honest. Right? If they're self-publishing.
Yeah.
If they have the budget and they're self-publishing. But here's the other thing, right? If you also say, so like probably Monsters sold the Firewalk team to Sony. They have their own marketing and PR and social, I think. And I believe they kept everyone on, right? So a lot of times they do keep the team members in. So, so it just depends on the situation, right? So it's not just if you end up with a publisher, you don't have a job anymore. So it just all depends on the situation.
And I was going to say, you know, we found our own pubs on remote game jobs and work with indies. So that's two websites that you can go to for honest to God jobs that are typically great. People who have money and pay for it. I've got a question that I'll let you answer offline directly. Mark on LinkedIn wants to know, how much does it cost to work with you? So I'll let you follow up on that one. But, you know, last one, and we'll let you go. Can you say anything about what you're working on with Tetris?
Oh, no, because we haven't actually determined what we're doing yet. But we're working on the 40th anniversary, which can be the whole year. The 40th anniversary is actually on June 6th. But
wow.
Yeah.
I honestly, God, didn't realize Tetris was that old. You know, but yeah, it is. It does make sense.
Well, how old are you, Jay?
Well, we're not going to get into that, but I think of Tetris as, I was like, I'm almost 50, but I don't remember actually playing a lot of Tetris until middle school or high school, which would have been a little bit after that, but no.
Well, right. So, because when it was accessible, right? And so it was more accessible when it was on the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's 40th anniversary. But because, didn't you watch the movie?
I have not yet. I want to, but it's on my list of shit to do at some
point. Oh my gosh. Well, watch the movie, and then you'll know the history of Tetris, and you'll understand why it's 40 years old.
I will say, Tetris is the first game IP that I remember from, you know, all the licensing work that we do that was actually going out and licensing their IP into other stuff before a lot of these companies were doing it. I mean, they've always been on the ball with that. So congratulations. I know that's got to be fun, especially for those of us who grew up with linking two Game Boys together in the lunchroom at school and making our friends angry and cursing all the time. So,
that's awesome.
But thank you so much, Dan. Welcome back. We really appreciate this. And this is all fantastic. And you can be reached on LinkedIn you're actually on our Discord while Dan's doing his thing. I'll make sure that you get the tag for you know, being a speaker. So you'll pop to the top of the list.
That's right. All of our contact information is in all the videos, and it's on YouTube, it's on Facebook and LinkedIn. Unfortunately, it's not in the description on Discord, but if people on Discord, if you come on over and look at that stuff, you can get her contact information there. Thank you so much. This has been awesome. We really appreciate you coming on here. All the links for Indie Game Business, it's scrolling across the screen. It's Linktree/IndieGameBusiness. We've got awesome merch. Also, if you sign up for the newsletter, you get some special stuff there. And our next conference is in September. So yes, be excited for that and be ready for that.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. You're very welcome. Thanks for hanging out with us. And we'll see you soon, because we all know you're not truly going to escape this industry. You'll still be in it like me. So you're going to be around. But no, thank you very much. And everybody, have a wonderful weekend.
Have a great weekend.